Okay, hello everyone. So today's topic is Hamas Amalek? A wonderful, beautiful topic. So I blogged a little bit about it on last week, but I'm going to talk more of a halacha question. And we'll talk some halacha, lo hashkaf at the end. So Prime Minister Netanyahu quoted the story of Amalek as a way to describe the savage Hamas attack of October 7th. He did not call for genocide. If you look in, the first source, you know, is that time, there's a Times of Israel article on January 16th where he says the PM's office says it's preposterous to say that Netanyahu's invoking Hamas was a genocide call. Prime Minister's office on Tuesday hit out South Africa's allegation that comments by the Prime Minister referencing the Amalekites, the biblical enemy of the ancient Israelites, in relation to Hamas were incitement to genocide. Netanyahu's references to Amalekites were part of South Africa's charges of genocide against Israel in the International Court of Justice, which were heard last week in The Hague. In a statement on Tuesday, nearly a week after South Africa made the accusations, the Prime Minister's office dismissed them as absurdities and said that the false and preposterous charge reflects a deep historical ignorance. Prime Minister's office said that when Netanyahu used the biblical quotation, "Remember what Amalek did to you," he was using it as a way of describing the savage Hamas attack of October 7th, and certainly not as a call for wanton killings. The Prime Minister's office pointed out that the same phrase appears in a permanent exhibit, the Yad Vashem Holocaust Museum, as well at a memorial at The Hague itself for Dutch Jews murdering the Holocaust. Obviously, neither references an incitement to genocide of the German people, the Prime Minister's office said. So too, Prime Minister Netanyahu's reference to Amalek was not an incitement to genocide of Palestinians, but a description of the utterly evil actions perpetrated by the genocidal terrorists of Hamas on October 7th, and the need to confront them, the statement read. There are several accounts of and references to the Amalekites in the Bible, including an attack by the Amalekites on the Israelites in Exodus, a commandment to remember what Amalek did to you in Deuteronomy, another commandment in Deuteronomy to blot out the memory of Amalek, interpreted to mean destroy the Amalekites, and the account of King Saul's attack on and destruction of the Amalekites in Samuel 1. The Prime Minister's office statement came as the judges in the ICJ continued to deliberate whether to order provisional measures against Israel as requested by South Africa, as it alleged that Israel is committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. It is crucial in genocide proceedings in the court to prove intent to deliberately destroy a people or part of it in order to prove that genocide took place, which is why South Africa cited Netanyahu's references to the Amalekites as well as other inflammatory comments against Gazans made by senior Israeli ministers. Okay, so Netanyahu obviously, so he said Hamas acted like Amalek. And the question is, I wanted to address is, can Hamas be categorized as Amalek? And what would the repercussions be? So what's the mitzvah of Amalek? So I brought some there's a lot of pages in the source sheet. So I only wrote the source in Hebrew, but I'll translate everything. So the Rambam writes, in the very first halacha, in Hilchos Malachim, the Rambam says that we have three mitzvos that we were commanded, Bishas, Knisas, and Arts, to enter Eretz Yisrael. Number one is to appoint a king. Number two is to get rid of Amalek. Lahachri is the Zaro Shel Amalek, to cut off the Zera, the descendants of Amalek. And he cites a pasuk in the Torah. And Livnos Beis HaBachira, to build the Beis HaMikdash. The Rambam writes in the next halacha, Minui Melech Kodem L'Melchaves Amalek. First you appoint a king, and then you wage war against Amalek. And in fact, he brings a proof text, because Shaul was commanded to wipe out Amalek, or to destroy Amalek, and he cites the pasuk there. It says, Osi Shalach Hashem L'Mashachah L'Melech, Atalech V'Kisus Amalek. What first Shaul is appointed king, and then he's commanded to smite Amalek. V'achrasa Zera Amalek, Kodemus Abinyan Habayis. And also, you destroy Amalek before, or you attempt to do so before building the Beis HaMikdash. And it says, Shenemar, the pasuk says, Vayihi ki yashav hamelech v'beiso, Hashem hiniach lo misaviv mikol oivav, that when the king was sitting in his house, and Hashem, I guess, created rest from him from all the enemies. V'yomer ha-melech el Natan ha-navi anochi yoshev beit arazim. So apparently the Navi came to David ha-melech. He says, life is peaceful for you. Why are you not building a house for God? So it seems that that ideally is the order. There is actually an interesting debate as to whether we accept, let's say, and it may seem like, you might think this is like crazy, how could this be? But let's say someone descends from Amalek and he says, you know what, you know, maybe the Jews have something to them. And you know what, maybe I want to convert. Do we accept their conversion? I think we had, years ago, didn't we have a child of a Nazi? He spoke at our, a child of a Nazi who spoke at our shul. So let's say someone, a descendant of Amalek, can he convert? And what does it mean that we have to wipe out Amalek? Can Amalek convert? There's actually a debate, but the Rambam in Hilchos Malachim, Perek Vav, Halacha Aleph, the Rambam writes, Ein osim milchama im adam ba'olam ad shekorin lo shalom. So he says that we first have to ask for peace. Well, in general, he said the first point is we first have, before we wage war with anyone, we have to ask for peace, whether it's a mechames or shus, mechames mitzvah. So we have to ask for peace, and then the Radvaz, and then it says shenamar, the pasuk says kisikrav el ir li lachem alav v'karas alav shalom. First, you ask for peace, and if they accept im hishlimu v'kiblu shev mitzvos. If they accept servitude and they accept the seven Noahide laws, we don't kill them. The Radvaz, in his commentary, he writes the following: V'hacha gabe shiva amim v'amolek. When it comes to the seven nations of Amalek, kasav rabbeinu, our rabbis write, im lo hishlimu horgim osam. If they don't settle for peace, we kill them. Aval im hishlimu. But if they accept peace, the Hainu, Shekiblu, Mas, Ba'avdus, Lefishi, Toso, Ein Horgimoso. So first of all, the Radvaz believes that the Rambam holds that if Amalek says we're about to attack them, and they say, okay, we surrender, and we accept to be subservient to you, you actually don't have to kill them. So that's, he says, the Rambam says that. He says, Bahavade Lesa, so that can't be. Then he says that basically the Bishlam are chokim im lo yikablu shev mitzvos beinoach leislan ba. So maybe nations far away, maybe they don't have to keep the seven Noahide laws. Of Shiva amim va'amalek shehem be'eretz Yisrael, but the seven nations of Amalek that they're in Eretz Yisrael im lo yikablu gam shev mitzvos horgim osam. And then he says, so the Radvaz thinks that what the Rambam holds is that if basically Amalek, you say, have a descendant of Amalek in Eretz Yisrael, they accept servitude, they accept to keep the Sheva Mitzvos, but you know, the seven Noahide laws, you don't kill them. So it's not like an absolute that you have to kill them. And furthermore, the next point, the next halacha, the Rambam says, Kol ha'akum, all non-Jews, kulam kisheyizgayru v'yikablu aleihem kol ha'mitzvah sheba Torah, if they convert and they accept upon themselves all the mitzvahs in the Torah, Va'avodim, v'kisheyishtachru, and Eved Kananis, you know, non-Jewish slaves, when they're freed, harehen k'Yisrael l'chol davar. They are like a Yisrael, they're like a Jew in all instances, and there are no carve-outs for Amalek. So the Rambam actually is of the opinion. So number one, it's not correct that, by the way, you automatically wipe out Amalek. If they want to accept peace and they keep the seven Noahide laws, you don't kill them. And secondly, what's even more interesting, I found, is that according to the Rambam, they can actually convert. We say, oh, you're a biological descendant of Amalek, I have to wipe you out. Not so true. If you convert, then they are not killed. According to the Rambam, one of his proofs for that is, the Gemara in Gittin says, Nevuzaradan, he was like the chief... He was one of the executioners in the time of the first Beis HaMikdash. There's a whole kinna written about him when he sees all this blood in the Beis HaMikdash. It's because they killed a Navi 200 years earlier. So he was a Geret Tzedek. He converted. And then it says, Mibnei Banav Shel Haman loved the Torah in Bnei Brak. The descendants of Haman taught Torah, not just anywhere, in Bnei Brak. I mean, come on, you can't forget better than that. You know, they taught Torah in Bnei Brak. So the indication that some want to say is that, Haman comes from Amalek. So the indication is that this actual descendants can convert. This is a debatable point. There's a medrash in the Mechilta, which says, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Nishba ha-makom b'kisei ha-kavod, shelo shim yavo echa mikol umo sh'holam liskar shi'kabluhu, ula amalek ulubesa lo yikabluhu. Rabbi Eliezer thinks that you cannot convert someone from Amalek, because Hashem said in Parsh B'Shalach, it's a melchama ba'amalek midor dor. It's absolute, okay? You know, it runs into theological questions of free will. Yes, Judah?
Why didn't Shaul extend Shalom to Amalek?
Right, so that could have been I don't know the answer to the question. Hashem basically said to wipe, that was a commandment from Hashem. I think if someone, maybe they had shown prior violent tendencies. I don't know the answer to the question. Right. Correct. So I don't know what was going on at that point when they were. So maybe they were waging war before. Whatever. They apparently were I mean, God said so. So I don't know like how that plays into the general, you know, consensus. These things are also very difficult because they're all writing these halachos at a time where we don't know who the biological descendants of Amalek are. So it's like they're telling all these rules about kill Amalek. I'm not getting into the morality of this, which is an interesting question, but they're making all these rules at a time where we don't know who the identity of Amalek is. But my only point to you is just you should understand that it's not even, there's a debate as to whether even Amalek can convert or not. Rav Tzedakom in Lublin, in the Sefer Rishis Yilayla writes, V'chein klitas atov da Amalek, gam kein hu baderech zesh, de'ein makab m'ger mehem, im lo baderech michshol. We should not accept converts from Amalek, Dal Kain, Kach Hayu Bnei Banav Shel Haman. We only accept sometimes converts by a stumbling block, by mistake. Dal Kain, Kach Hayu Bnei Banav Shel Haman, Delimdu Torah B'Bnei Brak. He said he wants to suggest maybe it was a mistake that they accepted the children of Haman, the descendants of Haman as converts. O Delo Yadu Shekibul Shemizar Amalek, Ubedieved. Maybe they didn't know that they were descendants, and they found it only afterwards. So ex post facto, the conversion is valid. Vakarovio Serbina, it seems to me, says Rav Tzedakah Kohen, Shaya de Goy, mi b'nei banav shel Haman, Shaba abas Yisrael ba'one stavlat kasher. It's probably what? There was probably a male descendant of Amalek who had relations with a Jewish woman, and the children were Jews, but descended from Amalek. So my point to you is that what's interesting is that number one is you have to ask for peace, and number two is there is an actual dispute as to whether Amalek is allowed to convert. Now, what I really want to talk about, though, is one other point. This Rav Shachter makes this point in the next passage. Is Rav Soloveitchik elaborate on the concept of man being called upon to act as an agent on behalf of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem could certainly accomplish the given task without the assistance of the Shaliach, that sometimes it's our job to partner with Hashem, right? That we are sometimes a Shaliach of Hashem, we're an emissary of Hashem. Hashem involves man in his activities in order to give him the opportunity to partner with him. By means of the Shlichus, man achieves great significance, since Shlucho Shalom Kamoso, a person's agent, is like himself. He is elevated to the level of the Mishaleach, the one who sends him. Hashem created an entire universe from Tov Avo, from chaos and the chaos and void that was present before creation. Nevertheless, the Rav explained, not all of Tov Avo was replaced at the time of creation. Some of this primordial entropy was allowed to remain so that man, through his own effort, could actively play a role in destroying it. Amalek, the Rav continued, is the physical embodiment of this leftover. And therefore Hashem swears, Tov avot, ki mocha emcha, ezecham v'ptach ha-shamayim, that I shall surely erase Meir Amalek from under the heavens. Yet Hashem also commands, you shall Timcha Zecher HaMalek Mitach HaShemayim, wipe out the memory of HaMalek from under the heavens. He wants us to become Shutfim, be partners with him in the enterprise of Tikkun HaOlam. Now again, how this relates to free will, I'm not sure, but that's obviously a challenging point. But what Rav Schechter, quoting Rav Soloveitchik, who says that our obligation to destroy evil is part of a partnership with Hashem. When we think of partnering with Hashem, it's about, you know, creating the world. So it's, sometimes you do positive things to help benefit the world, do creative acts. But we know that there are, like, you know, Melech HaShabbos. So the Melech HaShabbos, the 39 categories of Shabbos, they're all melechos. They're all creative activities. But some of the melechos are what? Destructive. Mochek, erase. Soser, destroy. There are certain, Korea, to rip. So there are certain malachos which are destructive for the purpose of being constructive. So that's how we views Amalek. But what's interesting is that they developed this kind of theology that Amalek is not necessarily only defined biologically, because if it's only defined biologically, so then we don't know who Amalek is unless they have, you know, they have a Cohen gene, maybe they have an Amalek gene. I don't know who would want to take that test nowadays, but you know, so it just becomes like a theoretical study of what this mitzvah is all about because it's not practical. But the question is, does someone who acts like Amalek acted, now how you define that, can't do these halachos apply? So where do we get this idea from? So in other words. Was Binyamin Netanyahu, was he just saying this, oh, it's similar? Or could you argue that there is a strong halachic argument to be made that when someone engages in such barbaric behavior, they're actually considered amalek, that we have to destroy them? So the Aruch HaShulchan Ha'asin, so the Aruch HaShulchan of Yechiel Michal Epstein, so he's in the 19th century, and he makes the following comment. He says, why does the war of Amalek precede the building of the Beis HaMikdash? Venir lefinestat, it seems to me, b'shenavin, when we understand, lama chara af Hashem ba'amalek yosef me'al kol lochom in Yisrael. Why did Hashem get so much angrier, as it were, with Amalek than the rest of the people who fought against Klal Yisrael? V'yeira eli, it seems to me, devadai kol lochomim letovas atzmam lichbosh medinos zeh derech ha'olam. Normally, why do you wage war? For your own national interests, to conquer territory. And afilu Mitzrayim shegazol Yisrael gzeros kashos. Even Egypt, they enacted evil decrees and harsh decrees on Klal Yisrael. Tchilas kavadasim letovas atzmam kivur b'torah. Why did they do that? They were scared. Havad is chachmalo, says Paro to his people. Maybe they're going to increase, they'll become a fifth column. There'll be a war. They're going to join our enemies and they're going to leave the land. So Egypt enslaved the Bnei Israel because of their own national interests. Aval Amalek Harasha, Amalek the wicked, when they waged war with Klal Yisrael immediately after they left Egypt, was not for Amalek's benefit. Bnei Yisrael was not going into the territory of Amalek. Amalek was in the desert. There was no fear in terms of, you know, conquering their territory in the desert. What are they going to take from them? What does it mean that they met you on the way? The intent was not to take territory. We were in the desert. We were in the way on the desert. The whole intent of Amalek was evil, to weaken the impact of the miracles and the wonders from the Exodus and the splitting of the sea, and to weaken the power of that pure faith. That means asher karcha, lekarer oscha me'emunas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to cool you down from your strong faith that you had in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then he writes, this is where we begin this idea of a non-biological Amalek. V'cheimen sheze nogea le'ikar ha'amuna u'le'ikar torasei dakdosha lezechar abo av Hashem. And since this relates to the main faith and the main aspect of our Holy Torah, this is why Hashem got angry, as it were. V'lachein, therefore, kozman shezer ha'amalekhaim, whenever the seed of Amalek is around, ein Hashem shalem, the name Hashem is not complete. Vena kisa shalom, the throne is not complete. That's what it says. Ki yad al kes ka milcham al Hashem ba'amalek. Right? It said the ki yad al kes. Kes is short for kisei, and even Hashem's name is not full. It's not complete. V'lachein haya ratzon Hashem yisbarach shel yivnu abeis hamikdash shezel mekor kedushas yisrael v'chizik toraso hakadosha ad sheachrisu azera tamei notis bechol dor v'dor lahachnis minis v'apikorsus b'yisrael. So Hashem wanted, in an ideal world, that we should not build the Beis Hamikdash. Obviously, we built the Beis Hamikdash even without Amalek being destroyed. But initially, we were first commanded to wipe out Amalek because the Beis Hamikdash is the source of holiness of Klal Yisrael and the strength of the Torah. You shouldn't do that until you get rid of the impure seed that is spreading in every generation to bring in, to introduce heresy among Klal Yisrael. Like they bring doubt in faith, right? They introduce doubt in faith. So we want to get rid of them before we build the Beis Hamikdash. V'ilmale asa Shaul hatzadik ki pekudas Kadosh Baruch Hu kvar yotik olam. Had Shaul done what he should have done, there would have been a complete fixing of the world. Ach kisheni skalkel. But once it got ruined, az tumshach, then it should continue ad bias mishichenu, until the coming of our Mashiach. So he's hinting to maybe there's Amalek. What's Amalek? Amalek is someone or a nation that introduces minus and apikorsus, a lack of faith, a direct attack on God. And it's going to continue until the coming of our Messiah. But then he says, he finishes, what does he say? Vein kana makum laharich yoser. What's that? I'm not going to go on longer about this. Dezel b'chelek hadrush. He doesn't really spell out what he's saying, but he said this is drush. But he hints at the idea of Amalek as a nation that spreads heresy and apikorsus, a nation that attacks Jews for no other reason than we are Jewish. But he says that's drush. So he's not explicit about it. The one who made this popular is Rabbi Soloveitchik, he writes that he heard it from his father. The one who made this idea of this like theological Amalek, spiritual Amalek, was Rabbi Soloveitchik. But my point is there are hints to it in this passage by the Aruch HaShulchan. Rabbi, yeah. Right.
To Haman. So, I don't know what I'm really trying to say other than the fact that there is, even beyond the time of Shaul, there was an occasion
right.
where we could point to
that, right. Right, so, right, if you say Hagagi literally means, right, that's the way Chazal generally, again, it's probably correct. I'm not saying it's definitely correct. No, that's how we generally. No, what I'm saying is that's how we generally understand that. Because we understand that Haman wanted to wipe out the Jews. He comes from Amalek, and everyone says he comes. There's the Masorah that he comes from Amalek. Like I don't see anywhere else, and like it fits perfectly with the notion of someone who wants to wipe out the Jewish people, and he's called Ha'agagi. So we're saying that means he comes from Agag. Okay, that's one way. I mean, there are probably other ways you can interpret that phrase. That term. So like, but you don't know, at that point, you don't hear of anyone else who say that they're from Amalek. You have this individual who's Ha'agagi, so then we're going to play out that the fact he comes from Amalek.
Maybe using the term Ha'agagi the same way they're saying that Netanyahu used the term they're Amalek.
Yeah, so is the author saying that? So I'm not sure if I want to say that. I'm not sure if I can go that so far, but yeah, I don't know, maybe. But my point is, if that's true, and I believe it's true, he's probably coming from that. This Chazal associate him with coming from Amalek, but he's the only one. You know, again, so maybe we could have one person who claims the line of descent, maybe the royal family, right? Comes down, you have descent, but we don't really know of anyone else because Sanhedrin supposedly mixed up all the nations. So Rabbi Soloveitchik's piece, which we'll learn, is in a footnote. And it's in a footnote in a very famous essay that he wrote called Kol Dod Yidofek, right? That's that's where he writes about the six different reasons, right? The knocking of the door. Like he has this imagery. It's like, why should we celebrate the creation of State of Israel? So he gives six reasons. The sound of my beloved knocketh, right? So he's saying there are six reasons, six knocks, six indications that the creation of State of Israel is clearly Yad Hashem, the hand of God. It's something special, something unique. Right? Rabbi Soloveitchik switched, right? He was a card-carrying member of the Aguda. And then the Holocaust convinced him. He, like in the 1930s, he was like their best speaker, like at all these other asifas. He was like the top speaker. Then the Holocaust convinced him that we need a Jewish state. He changed course. He became the head of the Mizrahi Party. And he writes this work, Kol Dod Yidofek, where he basically gives six different reasons as to why it's important, where we see the Yad Hashem, the miraculous nature of Hashem, in the creation of the State of Israel. So in the context of this, he says the following. So we'll read this piece, but it's really the footnote, which really is this point about Amalek identified not only biologically. In the crisis that the land of Israel is at present passing through, Providence is again testing us. It is fitting that we openly state, this is 1956, this matter does not involve Israel's political future. The evil intentions of the Arabs are not only directed against our national independence, but against the continued existence of the Jewish presence in Israel. They aspire to exterminate the Yeshuv, men, women, children, infants, sheep, and cattle. Right? History repeats itself. At a meeting of Mizrahi, I repeated in the name of my father the notion. Now, by the way, many people, I think, when they hear this proof, they assume that Rabbi Soloveitchik said this in the name of his grandfather, Rav Chaim. So as far as I know, it's a mistake. I think it's his father who made this argument. Here it says it's his father. I haven't found it. Like, people generally say, oh, this is a Rav Chaim. People like saying it's a Rav Chaim. It sounds from. We're going to see there's an inference from the Rambam that he's going to make here why there is something called the spiritual Amalek. So very often, I don't know if it's accurate or not, but sometimes when people talk about like who makes diyukim, great inferences in the Rambam, it's Rav Chaim had a whole way of understanding the Rambam. So people, there are those who think that Rav Chaim, Rav Soloveitchik's grandfather, made this argument, but it's pretty clear that Rav Soloveitchik quotes his father who makes this argument, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik. So he says that, name of my father, the notion that Shem will have war against Amalek from generation to generation is not confined to a certain race, but includes a necessary attack against any nation or group infused with mad hatred that directs its enmity against the community of Israel. When a nation emblazons on its standard, Come, let us cut them off from being a nation, so that the name of Israel shall no longer be remembered. It becomes Amalek. In the 1930s and 1940s, the Nazis, with Hitler at their helm, filled this role. In this most recent period, they were the Amalekites, the representative of insane hate. Today, the throngs of Nasser and the Mufti have taken their place. If we are again silent and do not know how we will be judged before God, do not rely on the justice of the liberal world. Those pious liberals were alive 15 years ago and witnessed the destruction of millions of people with equanimity and did not lift a finger. They are liable to observe, God forbid, the repetition of the bloodbath and not lose a night's sleep. Now, in this footnote 23, the Rabbi Soloveitchik is going to explain why his father believes that Amalek is not only a biology, but it's not only a biological nation, but it can be anyone who wants to wipe out the Jewish people for being Jews. So if you actually just look at the Rambam, and then we'll read the footnote. So the Rambam says, there's a mitzvah in Hilchos Melachim, Perkei, Halacha Dalet, it says, mitzvah aseh, lahachrim shivas amim. There's a mitzvah to wipe out the seven nations. Shinem b'achrim tachrimim, right? There's seven nations that lived in Eretz Yisrael, is meant to wipe them out. The kol shevali yado echa mehem v'lohar, go over below taseh, shenem lo tchayek ha malacha, lo tchayek ha neshama. And if you could kill someone, you don't, you violate a prohibition. Then he ends up with these three key words, Uchvar avad zichram. What does that mean? Their memory is lost to us. Because we don't know who the seven nations are anymore. Okay, there's a mitzvah to, again, there's a lot of questions of morality with this, which it's not our topic, but there's a mitzvah to destroy the seven nations. But you should know, we don't know who they are. Right? So the Chayiv mixed them up. The next halacha, the Rambam writes, V'chein mitzvah saseh la'abed zecher amalek. There's also a mitzvah to destroy the memory of Amalek. Shenemar timcha zecher amalek. And umitzvah saseh liskor tamim masav v'ra'im v'avri v'aso. So the mitzvah to remember the evil deeds and how they lay ambush, k'dei la'or v'aso, in order to awaken the hatred. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, zachar es asher salacha amalek. From the tradition, you should say it, you should remember it through speech, and don't forget in your heart. You're not allowed to forget the hatred that you have towards Amalek. What three words are not here? What doesn't it say here? Uchvar, avad, zichram. That's the inference. We'll read it inside now. In other words, again, it says when it comes to the seven nations, the Rambam is explicit that seven nations do not exist anymore. And the very next halacha, where he mentions about Amalek, he doesn't say those three words. Yeah, Mendy?
Is there a distinction between wiping out Amalek and wiping out the memory of Amalek?
I think there's a lot. There's a lot to it. I agree with you. You know, the truth is, if you just read the simple reading of the text, it doesn't say the mitzvah to kill them. So that could be a discussion unto itself. You know, again, what's interesting is that when all these rabbis are debating about the mitzvah, what's the mitzvah? Is it to kill Amalek or whatever the case is? It's when you can't do it anymore. It's when it's all theoretical. So it's very fascinating. So maybe, but I'm just saying the way at least, and that's really a separate discussion. I mean, it's an important question, but what's clear is that at least the way the Gemara understands, the Rambam understands it. There is a mitzvah to destroy. There could be, if you look at the parshanim, like if you read like just the commentaries on the psukim, some may say who aren't halachic authorities, they may simply say it's a mitzvah to remember the evil that they did. Don't forget. And by the way, it's probably both. In other words, the halachic authorities say it's a mitzvah to destroy them. We're also going to tell them, you know, to remember what they did and to think, you know, to remember specifically, you know, what they did and how they want to wipe you out. But the simple reading of the text does not say anywhere they have to kill them. I'm not going to say therefore, you know, I don't want to go against the realm, like how you deal with it. This is a very difficult moral question. I'm not going
to. And it seems to be the language is different, makes a distinction between Amalek and the other seven nations.
Yeah. It never says in the Torah explicitly that you should kill them. But the mitzvah, the Rambam, seems to say that you should kill them. Sefer Chinuch is more. The Sefer Chinuch is more chamor. Questions, you know, what about the kid? Like, it's a very thorny topic. There's no great answer, to deal with our moral inclination. Rabbi Lichtenstein once said, I think I quoted this before, Rabbi Lichtenstein once said, he said that I once had moral issues with, like, the mitzvah to wipe out Amalek. And then he said, but, you know, I can sleep at night. And my Rav Chaim Brisker, right, the Rav's grandfather, he couldn't sleep at night because always babies coming to his door. He was afraid the baby would come to his door, and he was so concerned about, you know, he would take care. He would always be worrying, and such a Baal Chesed. He was like, he was known, Rav Chaim Brisker was known as to care of all the orphans, and he was like always involved in so much Chesed. So he's saying, like, Rav Chaim Brisker didn't have an issue with this. So he's wondering, is it my heightened morality or my lack of emunah? But these are very touchy questions, right? In other words, at the end of the day, we try as best, my general view when it comes to these questions, we try as much as we can. This is not our topic. We try as much as we can try to understand. And sometimes we don't understand, and it is what it is. But my point to you is, the language is a little bit different, but the Rambam still says, for our purposes, the Rambam says, one, there's a mitzvah, to lahachrim shiva avamim, right, to make them into chayrem, to their nothing, right, to make them, to obliterate them. But they don't exist anymore. There's also a mitzvah to la'abed zecher Amalek. Okay? And, however, he doesn't say chvar avad zichra. So footnote 23. With respect to the seven nations of Canaan, Maimonides wrote in Hilchos Melachim, is it possible to destroy the seven nations of Canaan? As it is said, you shall utterly destroy them. And anyone who encounters one of them and does not kill him has violated an injunction, as it is said, do not keep alive a soul. And in fact, their memory has already been erased. Radvaz located the source of the last line, and their memory has already been erased. In the words of Rabbi Yeshua, that Sanherib, the king of Ashur, has already arisen and intermingled all of the nations. So he lived about 140 years before the destruction of the first base of Igdash. But note something strange. In relation to the destruction of Amalek, Maimonides did not add the words, and their memory has already been erased. In Hilchos Malachim, Maimonides writes, and similarly, it is a positive mitzvah to erase the memory of Amalek. As it is said, erase the memory of Amalek. And it is a positive mitzvah to forever remember his evil deeds and his laying ambush against you in order to arouse anger against him. As it is said, remember what Amalek did to you. Tradition teaches, remember with your mouth, do not forget in your heart, for it is prohibited to forget his enmity and hatred. From the Rambam's words, it appears that Amalek still exists in the world, whereas the seven nations of Canaan have descended to the depths of oblivion. One wonders why Maimonides did not employ the rule of Rabbi Yeshua, that Sancheirev came and intermingled all the nations with relation to Amalek. The answer to this question is very simple. The Bible testifies that Amalek still exists in this world. Go and see what the Torah says, right? The Lord will have war with Amalek, midor lador, right? That Hashem will wage war with Amalek, b'cham Hashem b'Amalek, dor, from generation to generation. Accordingly, it is impossible for Amalek to be blotted out of the world until the coming of the Messiah. So said our sages, God's name and throne will not be complete until the children of Amalek are blotted out. But where is Amalek? I heard the answer from my father, blessed memory. Every nation that conspires to destroy the Jewish people is considered by the halacha to be Amalek. My father added that as concerns Amalek itself, we were commanded to perform two mitzvahs. For the individual to blot out the memory of Amalek, which is incumbent on everyone, to slay any individual member of Amalek that he encounters, as expounded in the Torah portion of Ki Tetzeh, he shall blot out the memory of Amalek for the community to engage in communal military preparedness for war against Amalek, as is explained in the Torah portion of B'Shalach, that Hashem will wage war for Amalek from generation to generation. With relation to any other nation that stands ready to destroy us, we are now, after the time of Sanherib, commanded to wage war against it, even while it prepares for war against us. And our war against it is a mechemes mitzvah, a war of a mitzvah, in accordance with the command of the Torah that Hashem shall wage war with Amalek from generation to generation. However, the destruction of individuals, which is derived from the Torah portion of Ki Tetzeh, only applies to the biological descendants of Amalek. The words of the Rambam include the obligation to wipe out individuals, which does not apply to any other nation that plots destruction against the people of Israel. However, since the obligation of war against Amalek pertains to such a nation, he did not employ the phrase, and its memory has already been lost. The status of Amalek exists even now, after the nations were intermingled by Sancheirev. And perhaps this is the basis for the Rambam's view that a defensive war by Jews against an enemy who comes to wage war against it is a war of a mitzvah. For this kind of war is subsumed by the notion that Hashem will have war against Amalek from generation to generation. To be sure, the Rambam especially singled out war with Amalek. Nevertheless, one may say that saving Jews from an enemy that has arisen to destroy them is encompassed into this Torah portion. So, essentially, that I think the point is that Rav Soloveitchik believes that there's an individual obligation to kill biological descendants of Amalek. Again, how you deal with that? Like, can they convert? Maybe they can convert. They keep Shem Mitzvah Noach. That might also be okay. But again, they're discussing, debating this when it's only theoretical. And then there's this non-theoretical obligation to wipe out an enemy that wishes to destroy us, like Amalek. And maybe the point is that we must commit, and it's hard for Jews to say this, the point is we must commit genocide, it's hard to say this, against Amalek. In other words, like, yeah, and for PR reasons, we just have to say that the actions of Hamas are like Amalek. But maybe the response has to be like what we do against Amalek. I'm not saying all Palestinians. I'm saying with those that wish to destroy us. And maybe the point is, and maybe this is the point of the Torah, that there's no room for ceasefire. Not simply Amalek for what they did, but you have to utterly destroy them. I saw this nice article in Mosaic a few months ago. It says, while the Bible's call to exterminate all Amalekites is indeed a call for genocide, the charge made against Israel of genocidal behavior or intentions toward the Palestinians, which by now has a history of decades, is so lunatic a form of Holocaust counter-projection, right, that it is all but pointless to argue with it. Nevertheless, a few figures are in order. Out of an estimated 2 million Gazans, so I know his mother Jones had stated that nearly a month after the Israeli assault on Gaza began, 9,000, according to Hamas, has been killed, of which one half to two thirds, to judge from statistics for previous Israeli strikes against Gaza, can be presumed to have been innocent victims rather than Hamas fighters. This was some 0.003% of Gaza's population, 99.997% of which was thus still alive. That's a sad loss of life, but genocide? Israel wanted to kill as few Gazans as possible. It could have easily killed 9,000 in the first minutes of its air campaign a month ago. One has to be thoroughly shameless even to speculate that it might be acting in Gaza from genocidal motives. Hamas, however, is not a people. It is an organization. When Netanyahu compared it to Amalek, he was calling for the extermination of an organization, every last one of whose combatants Israel does want to see dead, and with good reason. This is something that much of the world has difficulty understanding. It sees the war between Israel and Hamas as a war like any other. And wars, as is known, are most often ended by ceasefires and negotiated settlements. Hamas may indeed have been very naughty. Such a view of the conflict holds. But in the end, Israel should sit down and shake hands with it. After all, as the old saw goes, peace is made with enemies, which is the whole point of the comparison with Amalek. Hamas is not just an enemy. It is an enemy that obeys no rules of war, that has no human restraints, that does not know the meaning of mercy, that sadistically delights in the spilling of blood for its own sake. One does not negotiate with such an enemy. One does not make peace with it. One does not make excuses for it. Because there is a context in which its behavior needs to be understood. One extirpates it as much as best as one can, and if innocent people are killed in the process, they too tragically owe their death. And like what we see now, like in this I pointed out in my blog last week, that Israel's staunchest allies have become very frustrated over the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, the escalating number of citizens who have been killed, and the concern that the attack in Rafah, I think there were 1.3 million Palestinians there, will cause mass civilian casualties. And they're urging for a lasting ceasefire, which will yield a return of hostages, a cessation of military activity, and a rebuilding of Gaza. And many of Israel's allies just say, you know, you can't destroy Hamas completely. And they say they've done a lot. They've done a good job. And I think that what Israel's allies, I think that's the feeling, again, from what I read, again, it's hard to know, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, but it seems to me that this is the consensus view of most in Israel, not just the right wing, but most in Israel, is that they understand that Hamas is Amalek. They said that, you know, they will attack us again if they have the opportunity. And what that means is we can't partner with them for peace or for any permanent ceasefire that will leave them in power. You know, you can debate about a two-state solution, but it can't include Hamas. Anyone who really wants a long-term peaceful solution needs to understand between Israel and the Palestinians. I'm saying even like, can you have it, can you not? What do you think about the Palestinian Authority? Anyone who wants to have a peaceful solution needs to understand that Hamas can never be in the picture, that a ceasefire keeping Hamas in power is a pathway to assured continued conflict and not to peace. And again, like we have the terms of ceasefire and humanitarian crisis, they pull at our heartstrings. We are Rahmanim b'nei Rahmanim. It hurts us. And you see these pictures, and you see like those who were at the presentation Saturday night, and like when we were being shown like what some of these homes in Gaza look like. Beautiful homes, beautiful garden. Now it's all rubble. It pulls at your heartstrings. It's not so simple. We seek peace and we try to avoid violence at all possible. But sometimes it's important to come to terms with the identity of our enemy. And if that enemy acts like Amalek, then I think it's halachically, at least according to Rav Soloveitchik, we treat it like a molech, and that does have ramifications. It means that we have no choice but to utterly destroy it for the sake of peace.